Succession number 22381 Reel 2.
Right, is Harry Gibbons Reel 2?
Okay, so we've reached a stage now where we're brief for Arnhem. I'm briefed to go on what was called the second lift. At that time, I had a pilot. My second pilot with me then was a chap called Darky Newman. I mention his name for a specific reason. The first lift, we saw the boys off on the first lift on the first day. I can't remember, was that the Sunday, I think it was, wasn't it? I think it was a Sunday. And then, say, our lift was the next day, and we went off. Arrived over the landing zone, made a good landing, if I say so myself. Everything went well.
What were you carrying?
We were on a Jeep, and I think it was 8 chaps from the Air Landing Brigade. Just one little incident that happened that was worth mentioning, perhaps. We were unloading, and suddenly this very high whistling, hissing sound. And I think we all sort of ate earth, as they say. And when we looked up to see what it was, somebody had kicked the dinghy out, and it had inflated. So we all looked a bit sheepish. Anyway, that's by the way. So we obviously unloaded as quickly as we could, and we made off for the rendezvous, which is along by the railway, and to Wolfhays. I pronounce it Wolfhays, I think it's
Wolfhays,
Wolfhays, Wolfhays. And the other side of the railway, over the level crossing then, we went into this hospital, which is a hospital for people who were a bit mentally unstable, where they were all there. And of course, they poor people didn't know what was going on, but they were cheering and laughing and this. And we rendezvoused there, and eventually moved off, I don't know how long afterwards.
So you landed down at where you supposed to
land? No problem at all. Yeah. It was a good land, and most, what we saw most of it was all good land. We didn't come under any fire, not at that time. Hadn't come on any problems at all.
The battle had already been going for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. But more so at Arnhem, I suppose, than actually at the landing zones at that particular time. But what happened subsequent, then we moved off then in the direction of Arnhem, which ran alongside the railway. And then we came under a bit of attack from German aircraft. So we had to hold up for a while, and by the time we'd got very far, we were then ordered to hold and overnight to wait for the third lift to come in next day. And they unfortunately came under, by which time the Germans were well aware obviously, and they came under a lot of that anti-aircraft fire and that sort of thing, and we had to protect the landing zones till they came down, and then we moved off again, still coming under fire and this sort of thing.
You were on foot all this time, weren't you?
On foot, oh yes, on foot. I was a Bren gunner. I was carrying a Bren gun. I don't know why I got lumbered with a Bren gun, but I did, but it's a good weapon, I tell you. And, of course, we eventually came to Oosterbeek and the Heart of Steen Hotel, where the headquarters were. And we dug in the grounds of the Heart of Steen Hotel. I did, and Darky Newman and some others, other people went different places, but we were dug in there. Came under a lot of mortar fire there. We were also there when the RAF came in and did these drops of goods and things, which I believe included berries, something like that. So they tell us, I never saw any. We were there for a couple of days. And then eventually we moved out from there into the houses surrounding the area to set up this perimeter to protect.
I mean, you were fighting as infantry, obviously.
I had a Bren gun there.
Yeah.
So we went out on various skirmishes to clear out houses. As a Bren gunner, I was mainly involved in giving the other chaps covering fire, what you call covering fire. In other words, keep the enemy's heads down while they went in and did whatever was necessary. So we were doing this. We took over these houses, felt sorry for the people living there because they were still living there, and some down in the cellars mainly, you know. And we occupied several houses. We moved from house to house, and every now and again you go out, clear out some more houses of the Germans or whatever, while they come and try to clear you out as well, you know.
So street fighting.
It was street fighting. It was literally street fighting. But one or two sticky moments. I'll mention Tom Page, a good mate of mine. Tom and I were together quite a lot at Arnhem. And in this particular instance, the front of this house had been severely damaged. And we were at the top of the stairs, and you could look right out through the bedroom. And the Germans were just over the other side of the road. And there must have been a sniper over there. And we were stood close to just close to each other, and this bullet went between us and hit the wall behind us. It went like that, and I don't know if Tom got down the stairs quicker than I did. Now, Tom, you ought to talk to Tom, but he lives in Northern Ireland, I'm afraid, County Down. I'll come back to him again also later. So this was going on, and we eventually then took over a house. And we were up in the roof of the house, I suppose in the attic you'd call it, and the front had been damaged, and I'd set up the Bren gun in the front of the house. Some bricks had gone away, and you could see across the road there was some open land, and at the top of the open land, within Bren gun range this was, the Germans had set up what you might call a forward observation post, sandbags and this sort of thing. And there was a lot of movement going on there, coming back with the forwards, so we were under instructions to close it down if we could with the Bren gun, so we set up the Bren gun and fired at it. So for quite a while, and eventually we stopped all movement. So we did what we were intended to do. Unfortunately, the Germans didn't like it, and they sent a tank down the road, which stopped, parked itself up the road, and the next thing that happened was that they put a shell through the side of the building. And I mentioned my second pilot, Newman. He was killed instantly. And Star Sergeant Alfie Coates was wounded. And I was fortunate, another near miss, I suppose. I was laid flat on my belly with the Bren gun. And all I knew that happened, apart from the noise, was this blast of hot air and a red flash. And I was lifted off the ground and flopped down again. And that was it. So that was another lucky escape as far as I was concerned. But poor old Newman got killed.
So was the house reduced to rubble? Or what?
Well, all that side of the house was, yeah.
But you weren't buried in it, or anything?
No. Not to any great degree that I can remember. And that went on then for... That was the sort of thing that was going on.
Mm. Tell me, I mean, how was the battle organised? I mean, presumably you were given orders. Now, go up to that house and take... stay there.
Oh yes. You had officers, you see,
yeah.
And it was being controlled, presumably from the Hartestine Hotel was headquarters,
yeah.
So they knew what was going on, and they'd be getting reports back, you see, and that sort of thing. And then they moved you out until such time as you had this perimeter, which the glider pilots had their own area, as you may or might know, but we were looking after an area.
Mm.
We did have our own sector.
Yeah.
And so we were fighting as infantry, of course. Mm. Nothing.
Now, tell me, what sort of supplies did you carry on you?
Not a lot.
I mean,
we had some chocolate and things like that. But what we were doing when we were in these houses, where it was possible, there was stuff in the gardens growing. Remember, you know, and I remember we had a chap with us, and he was quite a good cook, and he used to go out and cook things, sort of thing. You know, and
so they had gas supplies in the
house. Yes, that sort of thing, and do that sort of thing. But otherwise, there wasn't all that much. You know, but you lived off the land, if you like to put it that way, to a degree. Yeah,
and water as well. Did you?
Water, of course, being in the house, there was water. Yes, there was that sort of. There's no problem there.
I mean, how much ammunition did you carry?
A lot. Let me put it to you this way: never ran out of ammunition. Had a lot, and there was ammunition back at headquarters that you could get as well. So you could get replenished of ammunition. But I had a Bren gun, which was used quite a lot, and I never ever ran out of ammunition.
Because the magazines are quite heavy. You couldn't carry
more. No, that's right. Yeah.
So what, did you have runners brought the magazine?
Go back and fetch you.
You go and get it. What other, did you carry grenades with you?
I had grenades, yes. I won't go into that, doesn't matter about that. Of course, the difference between our grenades, as you may know, the German grenade had got a long handle on it.
Stick grenades,
yeah. They were. And it was, I'd say it's fascinating, it's a funny word to use, but you'd be in these houses and they'd be lobbing these grenades, and they'd look just like blackbirds flying through the air. I found it fascinating to see these damn things coming through the air, you know, watching where they're going to drop, that sort. Because it was that close. It was one side of the road to the other, more or less, in certain areas.
You can see their faces quite clearly.
You see them, well, you can see the helmets, so you're pretty close to each other.
So how long did this go on for?
Well, this went on now for, well, it was on the 2nd, so this went on for, 9 days, I suppose, wasn't it? And then, either on the 9th day, we were summoned to a house, and I think it was Captain Ogilvy, who was D Squadron, I'm not sure now, he was drowned trying to swim over the river. I think it was him that told us that we were pulling out, and what we had to do was try and get old bits of sacking or anything to tie around our boots so we didn't make a noise. And then we had these camouflage jackets that buttoned up underneath, you know, and let the tail down. We hang onto the back of the tail going through, you know.
Well, so the other bloke, the bloke
that's
in front.
That's right,
the
bloke in front, you know, because it was pitch dark, obviously, back. And so eventually then we reached a stage where we had to pull out that night. Now, some people had a rough time getting down to the river. As far as I was concerned, now, this is where I was with Tom Page now, and Tom and I are together now. I don't know if I'm holding his tail or he's holding mine, but going down the river. And we got down to the river without too much of a problem. I think a lot of people came under fire in that, but we seemed to get down there fairly easy. I mean, eventually got down to the riverbank, where there's a lot of people waiting to get over the other side. And you wait and wait now. Everything is in order. There's no panicking. Everything is absolutely in order and that. And it's getting towards daylight. And we then near the front of the queue, Tom and I, and the boat comes over, little motorboat thing. And we get on shore on the boat, and he takes us to the other side. Now, I've seen Tom recently. He's living in Northern Ireland. I go to see him because we're still good buddies. And we're only talking about it. We don't talk about it a lot now. But he said, I don't know if you recall, when that chap said, this is the last but one trip. Because it's daylight coming on, you know. So we got over to the other side. I suppose we were pretty well, I was going to say knackered if I'm allowed to. And I still had the Bren gun. Had to hang on to that, Tom. And the next thing, then they had Vari lights firing up into the sky. We had to keep within the channel of these Vari lights that were firing into the sky. And we made our way. It was pitch black. I haven't come across so many deep ditches in all my life, sliding down and crawling up the other side. And after, I suppose it was several hours of this, they'd set up like a big barn, I suppose, where they were receiving us, and there was tea and that laid on, and we were put on board lorries, and we ended up in Nijmegen.
Who'd taken you across the river? Were they Royal Engineers?
I think it was some of the Wessex Regiment. Mm. A lot of the Canadians were doing that.
Where'd they get hold of the boats?
They brought them up. God knows, they brought them up.
They were army boats.
Yeah, they brought them up. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I suppose they were like these modern outboard inflatables.
That type of thing, yeah. That's right. Just anything they could lay their hands on, I suppose, that was the type
How
of thing.
How much sleep had you had in those 9 days?
Not a lot. But it's amazing when you're only 22 or 23 what you can do. You used to take it in turns to sleep, obviously, you see, but you didn't have 8 hours sleep or anything like that. So that's why I'm saying by the time we got back down to the river then we were pretty well tired, to say the least.
So you were covered in the reception centre at Nijmegen, did you?
So we came to Nijmegen. We were filthy, their clothes. I mean, mud covered, because I said we were sliding up and down these banks. And some of us were kitted out with trousers or that sort of thing, you know, just a bit freshen you up. And we were then put in, it was a barracks. And we were told we could sleep in the which is right at the top. We were in the top of these barracks. And Tom and I said, well, we don't fancy sleeping up here, mate. Not right at the top in this building, don't fancy it. And we ended up, we went down and we slept outside under a bandstand. I always remember this. It's one of these things that sticks in your mind again. And we were eventually then moved out from Nijmegen by road through what was obviously a very narrow passage that was still open to us, because it was still coming under shells from the Germans by all accounts. And we ended up in Belgium, in Louvain. And they put us up there. I think we were there for a couple of nights. I'm not sure. It was one night or two nights. We ended up in Louvain. And we were then flown back from Brussels to England. Right back, we went back to Kievel camp. And the thing that struck you was that you went to your hut and the hut was half empty. So many blokes didn't come back. And that was the end of Arnhem.
So presumably you had some leave, I suppose, after that.
We had some leave after that, we had a bit of leave and that. And then went back again and back to square one again, training and flying and this sort of thing. And then they brought a lot of second pilots in to make up the crews and that sort of thing, you know. And
you'd lost a lot of pilots at Arnhem.
Lost a lot of pilots, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they the second pilots, so weren't as qualified as the previous co-pilots?
No, not as fully qualified as we had been, you know. Because it was a question of getting bods there quickly, you know. That's as I understand it, and I think I'm right.
Were they capable of landing a glider?
I think they were capable of landing. They would have got it down all right, yeah. So then things went on, and the next thing we knew, now this was September, did certain jobs in between. We were ferrying gliders to different places, and some chaps ferry gliders to Africa, and I didn't do that, but some were. And then more exercises, and of course the next thing that came along was the Rhine crossing.
When was that?
Operation Varsity, March.
March 25.
To be exact, March the 24th, I think it was. March the 24th. Now, by this time, I had a new second pilot, who, funny enough, came from Trowbridge. Ginger Housley, Joe Housley. And so we were training together and this sort of thing. And just not long before the operation was due to take place, he and I and a couple of other crews, if I remember rightly, were moved from Kievel up to Great Dunmo to, I think it was N Squadron, but I'm not sure of that. But we were, and I mean, they don't tell you why they moved you, but we were moved and we actually did the operation from Great Dunmo. Unfortunately, this time we landed, but one of the wings hit a tree, and we made a pretty rough landing in which Joe Housley hit his head and had a nasty gas. He gassed all his head open and that. I was all right.
He was your second pilot, wasn't
he? He was my second pilot, yeah. And again, we had a Jeep and about eight blokes in the back. And they were all okay, but immediately we came under fire. We came under small arms fire and that. And we'd obviously landed on top of a lot of Germans.
Whereabouts, this was on the east bank of the Rhine?
East bank of the Rhine, that's right.
Do you remember the place where it was?
Not really, no. We were out in the country. There's some, unfortunately, there were some German barracks quite close to where we'd landed. So, no, I wouldn't know the name. So we got out of the glider as quick as we could, but unfortunately by that time, two of the chaps in the glider at the back had been hit and killed. But fortunately, just alongside where we'd landed, there was a ditch. And we managed to get in there. And we fought them off for as long as we could. But eventually they surrounded us and they lobbed a few hand grenades over, and I mean that was it. And I always remember like Hender Hawk, hands up, you know, surrender. And the chap who had his rifle sticking at me in particular was a German paratrooper. And I'm not kidding you, he was shaking like a bloody leaf. He was more scared than I was, I think. He was really, really shaking, you know, I do remember. And so we were taken prisoner. And he said, "Ooh, I can speak a bit of German. Watch." And of course I had the issue watch on. But I had the sense I'd pushed it right up inside me, up there. And I said, "Kainua." Right. And so he accepted that. So we were then marched off. And eventually, I suppose, it wasn't just us. There were lots of other chaps had gathered in. There might have been, I don't know, 50 or 60 there, and German officer and said, you know, with prisoners, and he did say something about, "You have been shooting some of our prisoners." I thought, "Oh, this doesn't sound too good, you know." But we didn't say anything, it just passed over. And
they were German army, they weren't SS or anything.
Oh no, German army, they were Tucker army blokes, yeah. Yeah. And we were then marched off into a sort of where they collected all these prisoners, and eventually we ended up, I don't know what the town was, but we ended up in a town where they put us on board trains, in cattle trucks of course, you know, and I suppose we must have spent a couple of days and nights in these cattle trucks. Not a lot to eat or drink. It's amazing, you don't need a lot to eat and drink to keep alive. Well, not to drink, not to eat, anyhow. And we came to this place, and they came round, old Stan, get off, get out. And we were marched up this hill, and we came to this prisoner of war camp, which is called Falling Bostel.
Called what?
Falling Bostel. Mm-hmm. I don't know the number of it.
Falling.
F. I think it's about FOLLINGBOSTEL, Falling Bostel. Mm-hmm. It's in northern Germany. And it was a prisoner of war camp. And we were marched in there. Incidentally, a lot of the guards that were looking after us then were either quite young lads or old veterans from the Eastern Front. You know, I used to talk to them. I could speak, I said, a good bit of Sprechensee Deutsch and that, talk to them. Certainly he'd talk about football and things like that, you know. But just to keep things going nicely, if you like, to put it that way, you know. So arrived in camp and told where to go to sleep and that. And who should I run into but Bill Higgs, who thought I'd been captured at Arnhem. And then I was able to update him on what had been going on about the Rhine crossing and that sort of thing. Now, I say Bill had been there a few months, and obviously, you see, and, well, you know Bill, he got himself organised, and he was sort of in charge of entertainment. And I was kidding now, because he's a terror for jokes. I said, you couldn't go wrong, could you? The poor buggers couldn't escape, could they? You know.
But Bill got knocked around quite a bit, wasn't he? I mean, he was shot anyway.
He lost his lung. He got shot in the lung. I don't know when that happened, what day that happened at Arnhem. I don't know if that happened as soon as he got there or how long. But he got shot up, he got shot in the lung, and then he was put in hospital, and I think he had a pretty rough time.
He wasn't treated very well by
No, he had a rough time. Germans,
I mean, your Germans had captured you, they were okay with you, weren't they?
Yeah, no problem at all. No, I didn't have any problems in that respect. No,
but 2 days in those cattle trucks can't have been any.
They weren't very nice at all, no.
I mean, no hygiene.
No. Well, they are.
Yeah.
So we ended in the prisoner of war camp. Mm. Fortunately, I was only in there a couple of days, and the self and a lot of others, were taken out on the road and marched. And we were marched east, until we were going east, until we came, and this went on for several days, until we came to the banks of the River Elbe, somewhere south of Hamburg. And we were stopped on the bank of the Elbe there overnight, and as I say, I used to speak to the guards. I said, what's going to happen now? Going to the other side. We're going on those barges, and those barges had lots of German tanks on them, panzers. I thought, well, that's nice. So anyhow, come the next morning, Olstein, get up, schnell, quick, come, we're going again, Sir Rick, we're going back. So I said, why? Why are we going back? The Rus are coming. The Russians are coming. We were dead scared of the Russians. And we didn't want to get involved, quite frankly. We didn't want to get involved with the Russians. So we did a smart about turn, marched back the way we'd come, more or less, I suppose. And after a couple of days, might have been a bit more, we ended up just outside a town called Zarentin. And they used to, at night, you'd either sleep in the fields, or they would put you up in German barns on the farm. And they've got big barns, the Germans, damn great barns, because a lot of them, they bring the cattle in at night over there. And anyway, we were put up in this barn in Zarentin, just sleeping upstairs in the straw. And early morning, a hell of a commotion outside. A lot of shouting and hollering going on there. And first airborne div come through. And we were released. Just like that. Marvellous.
So you went more than the odd few days in captivity then?
Not all that long, no. Only a few days actually in the prisoner of war camp, but a bit more time out on the road marching than this.
How did you feed out on the road? Do you live off the land again? Or
yeah, off the land and that. And They'd stop you in farms, and they'd get food from the farms and that for you, you know. And one thing when we got to the River Elbe, there was a Red Cross boat there with Red Cross parcels, and we got some food from that. It was actually there at the Elbe. So we were released at Zarentin. Now, what do you do? There's no organisation, you see. We were just told to make our way in that direction, sort of thing, that they'd come, you know.
No transport or anything?
Well, two other chaps, I don't know their name, they weren't glider pilots and that, and myself, we collared one of these German motorbikes with a sidecar that they free, and we got hold of one of those. And we drove in the right direction until we were told to stop, and we were gathered up. And we were taken to a camp where we were deloused, and we could have a wash and that sort of thing. And eventually then, flown back to England.